Chapter 21. He woke up. Cautious footsteps crunched over the rubble. He slipped noiselessly from under the covers. Elizabeth stirred and went on sleeping. Graber peered under the canvas. It might be Pohlmann returning, but it might as easily be thieves, or it might even be the Gestapo. They usually came at this hour. If it was the Gestapo, he would have to try to intercept Pohlmann and keep him from returning to the house. He saw two figures in front of him in the dark. As silently as possible, he followed them. He was not wearing shoes. However, within a few yards, he ran into a piece of wall so loose it toppled over at once. He crouched. One of the figures swung around.
"Is someone there?"
a voice asked. It was Pohlmann. Graber stood up.
"It's me, Herr Pohlmann. Ernst Graber."
"Graber? What's happened?"
"Nothing. We were just bombed out and didn't know where to go. I thought perhaps you could put us up for a night or two."
"Who?"
"My wife and me. I was married a few days ago."
"Certainly, certainly,"
Pohlmann approached. His face glimmered very pale in the darkness.
"Did you see me coming?"
Graber hesitated a second.
"Yes," he said then. There was no point in taking unnecessary precautions, not for Elizabeth, nor for the man who was now lying somewhere in the ruins.
"Yes," he repeated.
"And you can trust me."
Pohlmann rubbed his forehead.
"Certainly. That's sure."
He stood undecided.
"You saw I was not alone?"
"Yes."
Pohlmann seemed to have made up his mind.
"Well, yes. Come along. For the night, you said. There isn't too much room, but first of all, come away from here."
They went around the corner.
"Everything's all right,"
Pohlmann said into the shadows. A man detached himself from the ruins. Pohlmann unlocked the door and admitted Graber and the man. Then he locked it from inside.
"Where's your wife?"
he asked. "She's sleeping outside. We brought bedding along and put up a sort of tent." Pohlmann stood motionless in the darkness.
"I must tell you something, Graber. It could be dangerous for you to be found here."
"I know that."
Pohlmann cleared his throat.
"It's dangerous because of me. I am under suspicion."
"I meant that."
"Did you mean it for your wife, too?"
"Yes," Graber said after a moment.
The other man had been standing completely silent behind Graber. Now his breathing became audible. Pohlmann went ahead of them, and when the door was shut and the curtains drawn, he lighted a very small lamp.
"There's no need to mention names," he said. "Better not to know them. Then there's nothing you can give away. Ernst and Josef will suffice."
He looked very exhausted. Josef was a man of about 40, with a narrow Jewish face. He seemed completely calm, and he smiled at Graber. Then he began to brush plaster dust off his clothes.
"It's no longer safe here," Pohlmann said, seating himself. "Nevertheless, Josef has to stay here tonight. The apartment where he was yesterday no longer exists. Tomorrow during the day, we must see what else we can find. It's no longer safe here, Josef. That's the only reason."
"I know," Josef replied. He had a deeper voice than one expected.
"And you, Ernst?"
Pohlmann asked.
"I'm under suspicion, that you know. But do you know what it means to be found at this hour of the night in the house of someone who is under suspicion in company with someone who is wanted?"
"Yes."
"I think nothing will happen tonight. The city is in too much confusion, but one never knows. Do you want to take the risk?"
Graber was silent. Pohlmann and Josef looked at him.
"There's no risk for me," he said. "I have to go back into the field in a couple of days. But with my wife, it's different. She has to go on living here." "I hadn't thought of that."
"I didn't say it to get rid of you, Ernst."
"I know that."
"Can you manage to sleep outside?" Josef asked.
"Yes, we're protected from the rain."
"Then stay there. That way you'll have nothing to do with us. Early tomorrow, Bring your things here. That's what you principally wanted, isn't it? However, you can store them just as well in the Katharinenkirche. The sexton there allows it. He is an honorable man. Part of the church has been destroyed, but the underground vaults are still intact. Take your things there. Then you'll be free for the day to look for a place to stay.
I believe he's right, Ernst, Polman said. Josef knows about these things better than we do.
Graeber felt a sudden wave of affection for the weary old man who was again calling him by his first name as he had years ago.
I think so, too, he replied. I'm sorry I startled you.
Come in early tomorrow morning if you need anything. Give 2 slow knocks, 2 quick ones. Don't knock loud. I'll hear you.
Good. Thanks.
Graeber went back. Elisabeth was still sleeping. She only half awoke when he lay down and at once went back to sleep. She woke up at 6 o'clock. A wagon was clattering by on the street. She stretched.
I slept marvelously, she said. Just where are we?
On the Anplatz.
Good. And where will we sleep tonight?
We'll see about that during the day. She lay back. A band of cool morning brightness came in between the canvas and the overcoat. Birds were twittering. She pushed the coat to one side. Outside, the early morning sky was yellow and luminous.
A gypsy's life, she said. Full of adventures.
Yes, Graeber said. Let's look at it that way. I met Polman last night. We can wake him up if we need anything.
We don't need anything. Do we still have coffee? We can cook here. Or can't we?
I am sure it's forbidden, like everything else that's sensible. But what difference does that make? We are gypsies. Elisabeth began to comb her hair. Behind the house, there's some clear rainwater in a pot, Graeber said. Just enough to do a little washing. Elisabeth put on her jacket.
I'll go around. It's like being in the country. Water from the pump. Romantic is what they used to call it in earlier times, isn't it?
Graeber laughed. Even now, compared with the mud in Russia, everything turns out to be comparative. He rolled up the bedding. Then he lighted the alcohol stove and put on the pot of water. Suddenly it occurred to him he had forgotten to look for Elisabeth's ration coupons in her room. She was just coming back from washing. Her face was clear and young.
Have you your coupons with you?
He asked.
No, they were in the desk by the window in the little compartment.
Damn it. I forgot to take them. Why didn't I think of them? I had plenty of time.
You thought of things that are more important. My golden dress, for instance. Well, just put in a request for new coupons. It's nothing unusual for them to be burned.
That may take forever. The end of the world wouldn't jog a German official out of his routine. Elisabeth laughed.
I'll take an hour's leave from the factory and get them. The block warden can give me a certificate to prove I was bombed out.
You intend to go to the factory today? Graeber asked.
I have to. Being bombed out is no excuse. It happens every day.
I could set fire to that damn factory.
So could I. But then they would only send me someplace else where it might be even worse. I don't want to make ammunition.
Why don't you simply stay away? How is anyone to know what happened to you yesterday? You might have been hurt saving your things.
That's something I would have to prove. We have factory doctors and factory police. If they find out someone has cheated, there are penalties. Extra work, no vacation, and if that doesn't help, an educational course in patriotism in a concentration camp. Those who have been through that never stay away from work again.
Elisabeth took the hot water and poured it over the ersatz coffee powder in the top of the mess kit.
Don't forget I have just had 2 days vacation, she said. I can't make too many demands.
He knew she thought she must not on her father's account. She hoped in that way to be able to help him. That was the noose around everyone's neck. Those bandits, he said. What they have made of us.
Here's your coffee. And don't get angry. We have no time for that.
That's just what makes me angry, Elisabeth. She nodded.
I know. have so little time, and nevertheless, we can spend so little of it together. Your furlough is passing, and most of it is squandered waiting. I ought to have more courage and stay away from the factory for as long as you are here.
You have courage enough.
And it's better to wait than to have nothing to wait for.
She kissed him and smiled.
You've been quick at learning to find the right words,
she said.
Now I must go. Where shall we meet this evening?
Yes, where? There isn't any place now. We must start all over again.
I'll come and get you at the factory. And if something happens, an attack or a street blockade?
Graeber reflected. I'll pack our things up and go to the Katharinenkirche.
Let's make that our second meeting place. Is it open at night?
Why at night? You don't come back at night.
One never knows. Once we had to sit in the cellar for 6 hours, the best thing would be if we had someone to leave a message with if worst comes to worst. Meeting places alone aren't enough anymore.
You mean if something happened to one of us?
Yes.
Graeber nodded. He had seen how easy it was to lose track of someone.
We can make it Pullman for today.
No, that's not safe, he considered.
Binding,
he said, suddenly relieved.
He's safe. I've shown you his house, only he doesn't know we're married. But that doesn't matter. I'll go and tell him about it. Are you going there to rob him again?
Graeber laughed.
I really didn't have that in mind, but we do need something to eat, so I'll become corrupt again. Shall we sleep here tonight?
I hope not. I have the whole day to find someplace else. Her face darkened for an instant.
Yes, you have. I must be off now.
I'll pack up right away, leave our things with Pullman, and take you to the factory.
There's no time for that now. I have to run. Goodbye till this evening. Factory, Katharinenkirche, or at Binding's. What an interesting life.
To hell with an interesting life, Graeber said. He looked after her. She was walking rapidly across the square.
The morning was clear and the sky now a clean, deep blue.
Dew glistened like a silver net over the ruins. Elizabeth turned around and waved. Then she walked on quickly. Graeber loved the way she walked. She set her feet almost in front of each other as though she were walking along a wagon track. He had seen native women in Africa walk that way. She waved once more and disappeared between the houses at the end of the square. It's almost like the front, he thought. When you part, you never know whether you will meet again. To hell with this interesting life.
At 8 o'clock, Pullman came out. I wanted to see whether you had anything to eat. I could let you have some bread.
Thanks, we have enough.
May I leave the bedding and the bags with you while I go to the Katharinenkirche? Of course.
Graeber carried the things inside. Josef was not to be seen.
It's possible that I won't be here when you come back, Pullman said. Give 2 slow taps and 2 quick ones. Josef will hear you.
Graeber opened one of the bags.
It's like a gypsy's life, he said. That's not what I expected.
Pullman smiled wearily.
Josef has been living it for 3 years. For several months he spent his nights on electric trains, rode around all the time. During that time he could only sleep sitting up, and only for a quarter of an hour at a time. It was before we had the air raids. Now it's no longer possible.
Graeber took a can of meat out of the bag and gave it to Pullman.
I can spare this. Give it to Josef.
Meat? Don't you need it yourself?
No. Give it to him. People like him must survive. Otherwise, what will happen when all this is over? What will happen anyhow? Is there enough left to start afresh?
The old man was silent for a time.
Then he walked over to the globe that stood in the corner and spun it.
Look here, he said. This tiny piece of the world is Germany. You can almost cover it with your thumb. It's a very small part of the world.
That may be, but from this small part we have conquered a large slice of the world.
A slice, yes. And conquered, but not convinced.
Not yet. But what would have happened if we had been able to hold on to it? 10 years, or 20, or 50? Victories and successes are horribly effective persuaders. We have seen that in our own country.
We were not victorious.
That's no proof.
It is a proof, Coleman said. A very profound one.
His hand with the thick veins continued to turn the globe.
The world, he said. The world does not stand still. When one despairs for a time of his own country, he must believe in the world. An eclipse is possible, but not an enduring period of night, not on this planet. One must not make things easier for oneself by simply giving way to despair.
He pushed the globe back.
You ask whether there's enough left to begin over again. The church began with a few fishermen. A few of the faithful in the catacombs and the survivors of the arenas of Rome.
Yes, and the Nazis with a few jobless fanatics in a beer hall in Munich.
Pullman smiled.
You are right. But there has never been a tyranny that lasted. Humanity has not advanced in an even course. It has always been only by thrusts, jerks, relapses, and spasms. We were too arrogant. We thought we had already conquered our bloody past. Now we know that we dare not so much as look around for fear it will get hold of us again.
He picked up his hat.
I must go.
Here's your book about Switzerland, Graeber said. It's rather the worse for rain. I lost it, but I found it again and rescued it.
You need not have rescued it. One doesn't have to rescue dreams.
On the contrary, Graeber said. What else?
Faith. Dreams always reshape themselves.
One hopes so. Otherwise, you might as well hang yourself.
How young you still are, Pullman said. But what am I saying? You really are still very young.
He put on his overcoat.
Strange. I had always pictured youth differently.
So had I, Graeber said.
Josef had been correctly informed. The sexton of the Katharinenkirche took charge of their things. Graeber left his knapsack there. Then he went to the housing authority. It had been forced to move and was now located in the natural history room of a school. A stand with maps and a glass case with exhibits in alcohol were still there. The woman in charge had used some of the jars as paperweights. There were snakes, lizards, and frogs. In addition, there was a stuffed squirrel with glass eyes and a nut between its paws. The woman clerk was a friendly, gray-haired person.
I will note down your name for emergency quarters, she said. Have you an address?
No.
Then you must stop by from time to time and inquire.
Is there any point in it?
Not the slightest. There are 6,000 requests ahead of yours. It would be better to see what you can find for yourself.
He walked back to the Anplatz and knocked on Pullman's door. No one answered. He waited a while. Then he went to Marienstrasse to see what was left there. Elisabeth's house had burned down to the block warden's story. The fire department had been there. Water was still dripping from everything. Of Elisabeth's apartment, nothing was left. The armchair that had been standing outside was gone, too. A pair of wet blue gloves lay in the gutter. That was all. Graeber saw the block warden behind the curtains of his apartment. He remembered he had promised him cigars. That seemed a long time ago and no longer necessary. But one could never tell. He decided to go and see Alphonse. In any case, he needed supplies for the evening. Nothing else had been hit but just that one house. The gardens lay peaceful in the morning light. The birch trees swayed in the wind. The gold of the jonquils glistened, and the early trees were in blossom as though swarms of white and pink butterflies had alighted on them. Only Binding's house was a wild heap of wreckage, overhanging a crater in the garden where dirty water stood, reflecting the sky. Graeber stood for a moment staring at it as though he did not believe it. He did not know why, but he had always assumed nothing could happen to Alphonse. Slowly he walked up to it. The birdbath had been broken from its base and splintered. The front door hung in the lilac bushes. Deer's antlers rose from the grass as though the animals were buried under it. The tapestry hung high in the trees like the gleaming banner of a barbarian conqueror. Bold and upright, a bottle of Napoleon brandy stood in a flower bed, as though it were a dark bottle gourd that had shot up overnight. Graber picked it up, examined it, and put it in his pocket. Very likely the cellar is held up, he thought, and Alphonse has been shoveled out. He walked around to the back of the house. The kitchen entrance was still standing. He opened the door. Something inside moved.
Frau Kleinert, he said.
A loud sobbing answered him. The woman got up and came out of the half-demolished room into the open.
The poor gentleman. He was so kind.
What happened? Is he hurt?
He is dead. Dead, Herr Graber. And he was such a life-loving gentleman.
Dead?
Yes. One can't grasp it, can one?
Graber nodded. You could never grasp death, even when you were used to seeing it so often.
How did it happen?
He asked.
He was in the cellar, but the cellar did not hold.
The cellar was too weak for heavy bombs. Why didn't he go to the deep bunker on the Zeitelplatz? That's only a few minutes from here.
He thought nothing would happen, and then...
Frau Kleinert hesitated.
There was a lady here, too.
What? At noon?
She was still here, you see, from the night before. A big blonde. The Herr Commandant loved big blondes. I had just served a chicken when the raid came.
Was the lady killed, too?
Yes. They hadn't even got properly dressed yet. Herr Binding in pajamas and the lady in a thin silk dressing gown. That's how they were found. There was nothing I could do about it. That he should be found that way, instead of in his uniform.
It doesn't matter. And I don't know how he could have found a better death if he had to die, Graber said. Had he already eaten lunch?
Yes, very heartily, with wine and his favorite dessert. Apfelkuchen with whipped cream.
There, you see, Frau Kleinert. In that case, it was a wonderful death. That's how I'd like to die myself when the time comes. Truly, you don't need to weep about that.
But it was too soon.
It's always too soon. Even when one is 90, I believe. When is he to be buried?
Day after tomorrow at 9 o'clock. He's already in his coffin. Do you want to see him?
Where is he?
In the storage cellar. It's cool there. The coffin is already closed. This side of the house wasn't so badly damaged, only the front was entirely destroyed.
They walked through the kitchen into the cellar. A heap of broken glass had been swept into one corner. There was a smell of spilled wine and preserves. On the floor in the middle of the room stood a walnut coffin. All around, on shelves, upset and in confusion, were glass bottles with preserved fruit and canned goods.
How were you able to get a coffin so quickly?
Graber asked.
The party took care of that.
Will he be buried from here?
Yes. Day after tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
I'll come.
That will certainly please our Herr.
Graber stared at Frau Kleinert.
In the beyond,
she said,
he was always so fond of you.
Yes, I really don't know why.
He said you were the only one who never wanted anything from him. And then because you were in the war the whole time.
Graber stood for a while in front of the coffin. He felt a confused regret, but nothing much besides. And he was ashamed in the presence of this weeping woman not to feel more.
What are you going to do now with all these things? He asked, glancing at the preserves.
Frau Kleinert recovered herself.
Take as many of them as you can use, Herr Graber. Otherwise, they will only pass into the hands of strangers, she said.
Keep them yourself. After all, you put up most of them personally.
I've already set aside some for myself. I don't need much. Take what you want, Herr Graber. The party members who were here seemed to raise their eyebrows. It's better if there isn't so much. Otherwise, it would look too much like hoarding.
That's true.
Well, for that reason, and when the others come back, it will all pass into the hands of strangers. After all, you were a real friend to Herr Binding. He would certainly want you to have it more than the others.
Doesn't he have any family?
His father is still alive, but you know how he felt about him. And anyway, there will be plenty left. In the second cellar, there are still a lot of unbroken bottles, too. Take whatever you can use.
The woman hurried along the shelves, pulling out cans and brought them back. She placed them on the coffin, was about to go for more, then realized what she had done, picked them up from the coffin, and carried them into the kitchen.
Wait, Frau Kleinert, Graeber said. If I'm going to take some of this with me, then we'll pick it out sensibly.
He looked at the cans.
This is asparagus, Dutch asparagus. We don't need that. But we can take the sardines and oil, and also the bottled pig's knuckles. That's right. I am so confused.
She got together a pile on a chair in the kitchen.
That's too much, Graeber said. How can I carry all that? Come back two or three times. Why should it fall into the hands of strangers, Herr Graeber? You are a soldier. You have more right to it than these Nazis with their armchair jobs.
Maybe that's true, Graeber thought. And Elisabeth and Josef and Polman have just as much right. And I would be an ass not to help myself. It doesn't help, and it doesn't hurt Alphonse now. Only later, when he was already some distance from the ruined house, it occurred to him that it had really been only by accident that he had not been living in Bending's house and been buried with him. Josef opened the door.
Quick work, Graeber said.
I saw you coming.
Josef pointed to a small hole in the door panel.
I bored that earlier. It's useful.
Graeber placed his package on the table.
I was at the Katharinenkirche. The sexton said we could spend the night there. Thanks for your advice.
Was it the young sexton?
No, an old one.
The old one is all right. He let me live in the church for a week disguised as an assistant sexton. Then suddenly there was an inspection. I hid in the organ.
The young sexton had reported me.
He is an anti-Semite, a religious anti-Semite. They exist because we killed Christ 2,000 years ago.
Graeber opened the package. Then he got out of his pockets the cans of sardines and herrings. Josef looked at them. His face did not change.
A treasure, he said.
We'll divide it.
Have you so much to spare?
As you can see, I inherited it from a commander in the SA. Do you mind?
On the contrary.
It will give it a certain spice.
Do you know commanders in the SA well enough to get presents like this?
Graeber looked at Josef.
Yes, he said. Anyway, this one. He was a harmless and good-natured man.
Josef made no reply.
Don't you believe one can be that at the same time?
Graeber asked.
Do you believe it?
It may be possible, Graeber said, if one is without character or anxious or weak and goes along for that reason.
Does one become a commander of the SA that way?
Even that may be possible.
Josef smiled.
It's strange, he said. One's likely to assume that a murderer must always and everywhere be a murderer and nothing else.
In point of fact, it's quite enough if he is a murderer only now and again, and with a small part of his being. It's enough to cause horrible suffering. Don't you agree?
Yes, Graeber replied. A hyena is always a hyena. A human being is more various.
Josef nodded. There are concentration camp commandants with a sense of humor, SS guards who are good-natured and friendly among themselves, and camp followers who cling only to the good, overlooking what's horrible, or explaining it away as a temporary product of the times and a regrettable necessity. People with elastic consciences.
And people who are afraid.
And people who are afraid, Josef said politely. Graeber was silent.
I wish I could do something for you, he said then.
There's not much that can be done. I am alone. I'll either be caught or survive.
Josef spoke as impersonally as though he were talking about a stranger.
Haven't you any relations?
I had some.
a brother, two sisters, a father, a wife, and a child. They are dead. Two beaten to death, one dead of natural causes, the others gassed. Graeber stared at him.
In the camp?
In the camp, Joseph replied politely and coldly. They have extraordinary facilities there.
And you escaped?
I escaped. Graeber looked at Joseph.
Oh, you must hate us, he said.
Joseph shrugged his shoulders. Hate? Who can allow himself such a luxury? Hate makes one forget to be cautious. Graeber glanced toward the window, close behind which rose the rubble heap of the demolished house. The dim light of the small lamp seemed to have grown fainter. It gleamed on the globe that Polman had pushed into the corner.
You are going back to the front?
Joseph asked courteously.
Yes, back to fight so that the criminals who are hunting you can remain in power a while longer, perhaps just long enough to catch you and hang you.
Joseph made a slight gesture of agreement and was silent.
I am going because otherwise they would shoot me,
Graeber said. Joseph did not reply.
And I am going because if I deserted, they would lock up my parents and my wife or send them to a camp or kill them.
Joseph was silent.
I am going and I know that my reasons are no reasons, and yet they are the reasons of millions. How you must despise us.
Don't be so vain, Joseph said softly. Graeber stared at him. He did not understand.
Nobody's talking about despising anyone, Joseph said.
Only you.
Why is that so important to you? Do I despise Polman? Do I despise the people who hide me every night at the risk of their lives? Would I be alive if it weren't for them? How naive you are.
Suddenly he smiled again. It was a ghostly smile that flitted over his face without touching it.
We're getting away from the subject, he said. One oughtn't to talk too much, and one oughtn't to reflect. Not yet. It weakens you. So does remembering. It's too early for all that. In time of danger, you should think only about how to save yourself.
He pointed to the canned goods.
This will help. I'll take it. Thanks.
He took the cans and the preserves and put them behind the books. He did it in a curiously awkward way. Graeber saw that the last joints of his fingers were deformed and without nails. Joseph noticed his glance.
A little remembrance of the camp, the Sunday entertainment of a troop leader. He called it lighting the Christmas candles, sharply pointed matches. I wish he had used my toes instead. Then it wouldn't be so conspicuous. This way I'm easily recognized. On the street I wear gloves.
Graeber got up. Would it help you if I gave you an old uniform and my paybook? You could alter it where necessary. I can say it was burned.
No, thanks, I don't need it. For the immediate future I am going to become a Romanian. Polman thought that up and arranged it. He's very clever at that sort of thing. You wouldn't think it to look at him, would you? I'll become a Romanian, a member of the Iron Front, a friend of the party. My appearance is all right for a Romanian, and my injuries can be more easily explained, inflicted by the communists. Are you going to take your bedding and bags along with you?
Graeber realized that Joseph wanted to be rid of him.
Are you going to stay here?
He asked.
Why?
Graeber pushed his own supply of canned goods over toward him.
I can get more. I'll go back again and bring another load.
It's too much as it is. I don't dare carry much baggage. And now I must go. I can't wait any longer.
Cigarettes. I forgot cigarettes. There are plenty of them there. I can go and get them.
Joseph's face changed. All at once it became relaxed and almost soft.
Cigarettes, he said, as though he were talking about a friend. That's different. They're more important than food. I'll wait for them, of course.